Hello, and welcome to the Space Coast Pet Podcast, the podcast for pets and the people who love them. Now here's your host, veterinarian Dr. Roger Welton.
Hello, pet lovers, and welcome to the Space Coast Pet Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Roger Welton, practicing veterinarian. Welcome to the program. This is a particularly difficult one for me. I'm normally here to spread information, enjoy, love of pets, and celebrate. And today is an extension of that. We had a really tough week in the Welton household. We lost our beloved almost five-year-old Labrador Retriever, Stella. Today, to say this dog was special is an understatement. I'm podcasting on a Saturday because we just lost her this past Tuesday, and I finally have the heart to talk about it because I need to get this off my chest for therapeutic reasons, but also to impart the knowledge and lessons that I gained from this, both as a pet parent and as a veterinarian, as soon as humanly possible. So that's why we're a little off schedule. Stella would have turned 5 years old tomorrow. Tomorrow's her birthday. So at any rate, Stella came into my life as a special needs dog. She was an eight-week-old puppy, and she had an odd neurological condition that we had yet to figure out, and the owners were a wonderful young family who had gotten this dog for their two young kids. I think it was one of their birthdays. Her name was Penny at the time, and she would just kind of walk along, and her head would just kind of start ticking, and then she'd just kind of fall over to the side, remain lucid, and her head would tick, and then she'd snap out of it and be normal for a while. She was still eating. She was still thriving and growing, but she had this weird thing. So I did not see Penny. It was actually my colleague, Dr. Fogelberg, who had seen her. I was not in the clinic that day. And he presented them with a neurological workup with a list of possible things that this could be, some more fixable than others. And the folks looked at the cost of the workup and having the knowledge that they might make this investment, both financial and emotional, and it not be figured out or may not be treatable. They just could not reconcile going further. And so Dr. Fogelberg had suggested an owner surrender of the puppy to see if we could take over the puppy's case and get it figured out. And you know, somebody in that clinic would take this gorgeous white yellow lab puppy, even if there was going to be treatment necessary. And so Dr. Fogelberg called me up, and I was owner of the clinic at the time, and he said, hey, I want to run this past you before I make the decision, but I think we might be able to treat this dog, and somebody will, in the clinic, I think would take the puppy, and we could certainly find her home through one of our clients at the very least, if we can figure this out. I said, sure. Well, there was a little bit of method behind his madness, because he knows I have a passion for Labrador Retrievers, and I come in, and they're like, well, here's the owner surrender, and I look at this dog, and I said, oh, are you kidding me? I'm like, I'm taking this dog. Nobody else is taking this dog. And so ultimately, I ran all these tests, and everything came up negative. So I took her to a neurologist, veterinary neurologist. And luckily, she had one of those episodes right in front of him. And he discovered that, oh, that looks like canine epileptoid cramping syndrome. It's slightly convulsive activity that occurs near the cerebellum, which is an area of balance in the brain. He said, incidentally, it's uniquely tied to gluten, and if you feed her a gluten-free diet, you may be able to get away with not medicating her. And lo and behold, that's what we did. We put her on a hypoallergenic prescription diet called DD Duck, and didn't need medication, and her life was a complete success. We later figured out she was also deaf, so clearly, there's probably some inbreeding going on. This was ultimately a Craigslist find. But just a delightful dog. She only grew to 50 pounds. We used to call her our mini lab. And despite being deaf, she was so smart. We didn't even know she was deaf until she was almost 8 months old. Deaf as a post. I did all kinds of hearing tests. And, so we just taught her all with hand signals. And she was amazing. Like, doggy daycare couldn't believe that she was deaf. She was so astute, so just so smart and sweet and cuddly. and just wonderful. So she boarded at her doggy daycare over this past Memorial Day weekend. And, you know, Stella, as graceful and wonderful as she was still a Labrador Retriever. And as anyone who's had a lab knows, or, you know, if anybody involved in healthcare, they eat anything and everything. And so they're constantly having GI disruptions. And Stella was no different. Stella would yak up something, get into something, sometimes twice a week, at least weekly. It was just a normal thing. And, you know, we would basically, I'd give her a full nose-to-tail examination, palpate her abdomen, check her hydration, check her color, check her heart rate, and all that. And, you know, ultimately, if I didn't think it was anything like an obstruction or anything else that was more egregious than just dietary indiscretion, I would just give her an injection of Serenia, which is an anti-nausea agent and bowel-relaxing agent, and a shot of Famotidine, which is an antacid, and she'd snap out of it and she'd be fine within a couple hours. And rinse and repeat. This was like the majority of Stella's life. I had to hospitalize her 3 times in the course of her life. One time because she was actually with my kid's mom at the time when we were sharing dog custody. After this incident, she later became my full-time dog. She was going back and forth with the kids when I had them for my half of the time. She ate a whole box of Icebreakers gum, and she had gotten into my kid's mom's purse, and as a result, she experienced xylitol toxicity. She had 8 times the lethal dose, and so she really barely got through that one, but we got her through it. At the time, she was only 2.5 years old. Later on, she ate a bag of Baker's chocolate, which is the most toxic kind of chocolate because it's got the highest concentration of theobromine, which is the toxic component of chocolate. Once again, we hospitalized her, and her liver enzymes really spiked on that one, and she was starting to become jaundiced and barely made it through that as well. That happened because the pantry was left open, and she knows there's goodies in the pantry. She hopped up on one of the shelves and grabbed the chocolate. The kids had left the pantry door open. So the third time she was hospitalized, she had eaten got into the pantry again. It was left open a crack this time, but she used her paw to jimmy it open the rest of the way and ate a 10-pound bag of rice, uncooked rice. And so that is potentially lethal because that can expand greatly, I believe 4 times its uncooked size once in contact with fluid in the GI. And so she, once again, I didn't want to have to open her up. I thought I was going to have to, but we just carefully just watched her, gave her lots of fluids, and little by little, she spent the next 2 to 3 weeks pooping out uncooked rice. So that's all behind us, and we're being uber careful with Stella. Some of the other things she would do, she had an obsession with palm tree seeds that would fall down. So when I walked around the neighborhood, if she saw a seed, man, she'd grab it. Thankfully, the seeds were, you know, not very big, you know, maybe the diameter of my thumbnail. Still, though, she'd poop them out, throw them up. You know, they didn't necessarily agree with her stomach as much as she had an obsession with them. And so when I walked her around the neighborhood, I'd just painstakingly avoid the palm seeds when I saw them. But, you know, it's not always possible. So back to this past Memorial Day weekend, we had boarded her at her doggy daycare, like we always do when we go away. She was there with her brother, Alvin, and she came home, and she was perfectly fine. We had a great day, a nice cuddle. She was all worn out from her stay at Dogtopia because they don't put them in kennels. They leave them loose all day with other dogs, and they play. So she came back just exhausted, and everything seemed completely normal. And then we all go to bed about 3 o'clock in the morning. She starts vomiting. And so she just gotten back from doggy daycare. So my assumption is, you know what? She might have caught a bug, a virus or something at doggy daycare. She was there all weekend. Alvin came back with a little bit of a cough. You know, when you take dogs to these environments as clean as they are, it's like taking your kid to preschool. There's all kinds of things that, you know, they're in contact with each other. It's not the fault of the kennel. They do an amazing job of cleanliness and good air filtration. But this is just going to happen when they're in large groups, and that's okay. It's usually self-limiting or, you know, requires a little bit of treatment. So the next morning, she wasn't feeling so great still, so I took her to the clinic, and I gave her the nose-to-tail examination, palpated her abdomen, checked her hydration, all that good stuff, and I gave her an injection of Serenia Famotidine. Okay, she seems fine. Let's see how she goes through the rest of the day. I brought her home and went about my day, and, you know, essentially, yeah, she seemed not quite herself, but, you know, she drank water, she even ate a little bit of kibble, and just seemed to be bouncing back and heading in the right direction. And so, you know, because she was not really going for her food like she normally, like she's obsessed with food, I thought, you know, she's still not herself in the morning, I'll take her in for an x-ray. Well, in the middle of that night, this is now Tuesday evening, roughly 12 hours after the initial vomiting episode, I'm awakened by her making this odd sound, breathing weird, and she's doubled over in pain and panting. And I turned to my girlfriend, Jill, who lives with me, and I said to her, Stella is really sick. We got to take her to the clinic now. She's just taking a really big turn south. So we take her to the clinic. It's barely sunlight at this point. And take the x-rays, and lo and behold, I see an obstruction. And so we put her on fluids, shock doses. We start pushing antibiotics and preparing to stabilize her to the best of our ability to get her into surgery. My girlfriend is a certified veterinary technician. And then by the time we were ready to go into surgery, my senior technician, Megan, had arrived, and we were getting prepared to go into surgery. I got in there. Lo and behold, there was a enormous palm seed. I've never seen one this large. It was like the size of a plum. I don't know where she would have gotten it. The palm trees and all in my neighborhood are all palm trees that have the little seeds, but this thing was massive. It had escaped her stomach somehow, went through the stomach valve called the pylorus, had traveled down the duodenum, which is the first third of the small intestine, and lodged itself in the much narrower jejunum, which is usually where food is already fully broken down, and that's the absorption part of the small intestine, where they absorb the nutrients from the food. So the intestine was purple and strangulated. It was so tight in there. I promptly removed the obstruction, and what normally happens is as soon as you remove the obstruction, that you just all kinds of like fluid and, you know, foul smelling gunk that's been plugged up and kind of festering in the gut, you know, proximal to the obstruction, just starts flowing out. You kind of milk it out. You watch the intestine go back to its nice pink color gradually. You close it up. You lavage the abdomen. The patient lives to fight another day. Well, that didn't happen. Her gut motility was not bouncing back. It had remained in this sort of purplish kind of color, and within minutes of me closing, she coded, which means that her heart stopped beating. Chest compressions couldn't get her back, and I lost my own dog on my own operating table on Wednesday morning at 7 a.m. So the reason I'm talking about this is because not only did it, you know, if I were to lose a patient in this manner, it would be devastating because you're always going to look back and think, what if I took that x-ray earlier? What if? I always go back and audit my workup when I lose a patient to see, is there an insight I can gain from this to make sure that maybe next time I don't lose this patient? Every doctor, not every, but most doctors do this. Well, this is my own beloved pet. When I say I adored this dog, I know all of you listening know how it feels to adore an animal. The whole family adored this dog. She was really mostly my daughter's dog, my daughter Scarlett. She's 12 years old, and she taught her how to do agility jumps. So one year for Christmas, a couple years ago, that's all she wanted for Christmas was an agility set, a dog agility set, not to compete, but just to do it for fun. And every day she's outside in the backyard with Stella, and I'm just watching this dog do these agility courses, and I'm like, you know, how am I going to break this to Scarlett? And how do I live with the knowledge that had I done that x-ray, you know, the very moment she was vomiting, she may have lived. In fact, she probably would have lived. And I got to live with that for the rest of my life, and I'm struggling with it. But the reason I'm talking to all of you is because we have to, as pet owners, never get complacent in the fact that things happen to our pets on a regular basis, and we get used to it, and we think, oh, it's probably the same thing all over again, like Stella's a puker. She's engages in dietary indiscretion, and she's going to yak up a couple times, and I'll give her her standard treatment, and she's going to be fine. I got complacent because I thought it was just rinse and repeat, same thing. She was just a doggy daycare, probably picked up a coronavirus. You know, that's coronaviruses. I know got a lot of notoriety with the COVID, but by and large, they're mammalian and intestinal viruses that are very, very common, and they're usually self-limiting, don't require a visit to the vet. You know, a number of things this could have been other than a giant palm seed that I had, the likes of which I'd never seen in my neighborhood. I was later informed that that size palm seed could have been from a Cuban palm, but I know Cuban palm trees are enormous trees, and I haven't seen anything like that in my neighborhood. I don't know where she got this. I don't know when she picked it up. She could have, you know, eaten it before she went to daycare, and it bounced around in her stomach and, you know, didn't cause a clinical problem. And then, you know, she gets home and it busts through her pylorus, and now we're getting lodged. That happens sometimes. Maybe she picked it up that night when we got back and when I walked her. The doggy daycare is all indoors, so it would not have been possible for her to pick up a palm seed there. So they certainly were not at fault. I just don't know where this thing came from, but the bottom line is a palm seed killed my dog. And because I just fell back on my laurels, you know, the dogs don't always read the textbook, so to speak. So if there's an obstruction, one would expect abdominal pain. One would expect some level of shockiness. One would expect a high heart rate because of visceral discomfort. One would expect so many things. I could go on and on about what we're looking for. She didn't exhibit it. But this has fundamentally changed me because, number one, folks, if your pet, dog or cat, is vomiting, and vomits more than once, you know what? Insist on that x-ray. As a practitioner, I have always traditionally wanted to spend my clients' money as wisely as possible. That's veterinarians. We're empathetic people. We don't want to do anything beyond what is absolutely necessary. In doing so, though, we sometimes do a disservice to the patient because we should be recommending that workup because what if? What if it's a Friday and I'm not open tomorrow and I skipped that diagnostic step and something bad happened and now they're at an emergency clinic spending four times more, and maybe that pet's in more danger than it would have been had I done that x-ray that very day. I'll tell you a recent example. And, you know, this never burned me in my career where I lost a patient over this type of thing. It did not burn me until it was my own dog. But never again will it happen. When tragic circumstances like this occur, you have to make as much good come out of it as you possibly can. And that's what I intend to do, not just with this podcast. I'm going to blog about it. I'm also going to make sure as a practitioner that I will never allow this to happen again. Any young new graduate that I train, I'm going to just bang it into their psyche that you do not ever forsake a diagnostic just because the obvious signs aren't there. Recommend the diagnostic. If the owner declines, then it's on the owner. But you have to give them the choice to opt in for that workup. 99 out of 100 times, Stella's situation is not going to happen. That's why it's never happened to me in my entire career. But let me just tell you a quick anecdote. This lovely German Shepherd named Saint came in to see me. He had vomited a few times, but God, he looked so stable. Six-year-old healthy dog, and palpated his abdomen. Same thing as Stella, just looks stable as heck. And the owner did say to me that he's a billy goat who tends to eat anything and everything. Her daughter actually brought in the dog, and I called the owner, lovely lady, and I said, Donna, look, I'm not really picking up on anything of significance here that would suggest an obstruction, so let's just do some simple care here, see if we can keep this simple and not run up a bill on you. And you know, I did my standard Serenia famotidine, and let's do some famotidine orally at home, and let's do some bland diet. Don't feed them anything until dinner, and if we're not doing well in the morning, we'll come bring them on back, and we'll work them up. Well, lo and behold, and she was on board with that. Lo and behold, that night he went, he basically tanked so badly that she was waiting at our front door with Saint to get in as soon as possible. I got a call from my technician that, wow, Saint looks pretty rough. We should get in here and work him up as soon as possible. Took the x-rays. Oh boy, there was a lot of foreign material jamming up his stomach and small intestine. Got into surgery. I saw where the obstruction was. He got into a bunch of bathroom trash. I won't get into details as to what the nature of the bathroom trash was, but there was a lot of it. And there was some ropey material that was causing what's called a linear foreign body, which is among the most dangerous kind, because as the gut tries to propagate the linear, when I say linear, it's like a long rope. With cats, it's often like, cats love stringy things, so it could be some kind of string. It could be tinsel from a Christmas tree is common with cats, or fishing line is common with cats. So the body's trying to propagate this thing by peristalsis and contraction of the gut, but rather than move it along, they're just making the linear foreign body more taut, and the gut's bunching up around it and eventually lacerates the gut, and that's when the prognosis tanks. That had not happened, so I was able to do an enterotomy, which is a small incision into the small intestine, snip the rope, close that up, and then through the stomach, I was able to pull everything up through and out of the stomach. We lavaged his abdomen, closed everything up. His gut went right back to nice and pink. We hospitalized him in intensive care for a day or two. Saint is doing amazing to this day, and his mom was very pleased that we saved his life. Wouldn't Saint have been better off, though, had I done it the day before? Had I not tried to save the owner the cost? Because he wasn't showing the classic signs of foreign body, even though there was indeed a foreign body there. So that's never going to happen again, because now I got, in a matter of 12 hours, actually less than 12 hours, my dog went from stable and normal to no longer alive. And I don't know, I think I may need therapy to get the memory of her dying on my table to be able to be able to reconcile that and not be ridden with so much guilt. Thank God it never happened before to one of my patients. But it happened to my own dog, and it's unbearable. And I have to live with that. And so when your veterinarian makes a recommendation, don't think that they're trying to gouge any dog that's vomiting, any cat that's vomiting. Guess what? I'm going to recommend an x-ray that very day for the rest of my career. I may have 15 to 20 years left in my career. Mark my words, ladies and gentlemen, I will never make this mistake ever again. No patient will unnecessarily ever die on my watch ever again. This episode was as much catharsis for me to get this off my chest as it is to impart this information to you. If your vet is a vet like I was, past tense, that is cognizant of not wanting to run up a bill on you when it's probably not necessary to do that diagnostic based on the presentation of the patient, insist on the x-ray. Just say, look, I don't care about the cost. If it's not going to break the bank, of course. You say, I don't care about the cost. Please do the x-rays. I need the peace of mind. And that's what I'm going to do from now on. And there's going to be some people that call me a gouger, and I don't care. I'd rather you brand me with that because I'm doing this diagnostic step when we're not showing classic signs. I'd rather you brand me with that than ever lose a dog on my watch ever again. Thank you for listening. I'm sorry I didn't do listener email today. I just don't have the heart just yet to get back to my normal rhythm. I promise the next time I talk to you, I'll be in a better place, and I will be hopefully back to the normal Dr. Roger you've come to know. I love you all. Give your pets a giant hug today. Tomorrow's not guaranteed.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah. Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.